No wonder we didn't remember it. Be more creative with your names if you want me to remember what they're called.
Yeah. Take me to Spaghetti Island, a.k.a. England. Or Ireland, whichever eats more spaghetti. Because it's not Italy, that's for sure.
We're doing great, guys.
Hey, Lillian, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm also doing great. I just watched the video, the movie that we're about to talk about, and hopped immediately into the recording studio. So I didn't take any notes. All of my takes are going to come in hot and fresh.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, because people rudely wanted you to do your job for money this morning, which...
Yeah, I know. I'm like, come on, guys. Like, this is, I'm supposed to be blowing off work to watch old movies and then record stuff. So, but I guess I have to do my work.
Don't you? They know that you're a hyper specific influencer on the internet. Come on.
Right? I know. Seriously. So, we are here today to talk about the 1954.
Two.
Damn it. I asked you ahead of time and it did not stick. The 1952 Jane Eyre made for TV movie brought to us by the Westinghouse Company. So yeah, that's what we're talking about. But maybe I should do a quick recap first.
Please, please help people who have never, ever, not even one time seen Jane Eyre. And not only did they were like, you know what? I feel like probably really captured it. The 1952 TV movie put on by Westinghouse Productions.
Yeah.
And I think that I don't want to like watch it. I just want to hear someone else recap it for me. So for that hyper specific audience, Piper, what did we just watch?
Oh my God. So we just watched a movie in which Jane Eyre, who is a governess, she's just left a sad life at Lowood, which we did not see. She arrives at a beautiful manor, gets welcomed by a housekeeper named Mrs. Fairfax and a sleepy child named Adele. And she's like, this is great and nice, goes to bed, hears a scream, yowl, and then some laughter, and gets like scolded by a spooky lady upstairs in the attic. She's like, whatever, goes back to swinging with the child, teaching the child, numbers, letters, all that jazz. There's a sound of a horse in a distance. A man arrives in a garden. She helps him. She's like, oh, what are people talking about? That guy's not mean. I think he's cool. And then they have lots of little discussions. He has a wife upstairs who comes down and we see her face, and she sets the living room on fire, and Jane saves him, kind of, and then he has a party to make her jealous, to admit that she loves him, and she admits it, and he's like, great, we're gonna get married, but then some dudes come, and they're like, no, you're not, and she's like, oh, bummer, I guess that lady is his wife, and boo-hoo, and so then she leaves, and then there's she goes to the ocean or something, hears his voice, comes back, there's a fire has happened, he tried to save his wife, couldn't, so now he's single and ready to mingle, and blind, and Jane's like, I'll love you. The end.
It was 1:16.
Yay.
I love the idea of Rochester like being ready to go clubbing, but he's blind now, and Jane shows back up and he's like, damn, I was finally gonna get back out there. Well, I guess the love of my life came back, so it's fine.
Oh, rats, I had just put on my dancing shoes, but oh well.
So I think the first thing that jumped out to me watching this, which I did mention to you when you let me know that you did need more time to finish watching the movie / start watching the movie, is we just watched this. We just watched this movie. It is, they made some changes. I looked and technically they have different screenwriters for this one and the 1949 one that we watched. They are both Studio One Productions. Obviously they have, this one has a much more vocal sponsor, but it's the same movie. So if you watch the 1949, you're like, I liked it. I just wish that Charlton Heston wasn't in it and a man with weird teeth was instead.
Yes. Okay. Let's, first of all, agreed. It's pretty much the same film. Second of all, let's talk about this man's teeth and his face in general.
Why was he was like, it was like he was wearing fake teeth and so it felt weird in his mouth.
Yeah.
So he kept like sucking his teeth and like making other weird things. Also, he was American, right?
Oh yeah, 100%.
They did not even like pretend. Like, she had like a mid-Atlantic accent, which is fake Hollywood, and then he just like didn't even pretend a little bit. They were like, people don't know if I just talk a little fancy, they'll think I'm British. Americans are dumb, which technically true, but it's me.
he sounded very much like, his voice sounded like a voice you would hear in like radio dramas at the time, which probably 100% he's done radio drama work. So that's probably why it sounds that way. But yeah, no, like, because like the quality of the recording, which, by the way, thank you so much, friend of the podcast, who sent us an email and said, hey, here's a version for you that's on the Facebook group. So thank you to the person who recommended it to us. And thank you to the person who uploaded it originally so that we could watch.
Yeah.
You all are amazing. But continuing on, this guy, he... because there wasn't a very high quality picture of him, I didn't get a good look at his face until like a scene at the very end when they finally did like a steady close up of his face when he's blind in the garden. Because before that, the way the shadows and like the distortion of the camera quality, he looked like he had weird jowls, or he looked like he had a scar in the corner of his mouth. And yeah, his teeth protruded in a weird way. It definitely gave the impression that the actor had like false teeth in, which maybe he had like really bad teeth. And so he was wearing almost like dentures to like make him look like he had nicer teeth, but it bulged his cheeks out in a funny way.
Yeah. And I've looked at, so he was in a bunch of TV shows for a really long time after that. The actor's name is Kevin McCarthy.
Why we knew someone
sound familiar.
Didn't we go to school with someone named Kevin McCarthy?
We went to school. It sounds very similar to someone. So probably the guy we went to high school with is actually a time traveler and was in this movie. Not two people with the same name.
No, that's impossible.
I hadn't read his name out loud, and so that's why I said it's so weird. Anyway, he was in a lot of TV shows, like into the 50s and 60s. He was in a lot of TV movies. He was in movies all the way until he was in a TV show in 2012 was the last TV show he was in. He was in an episode of Golden Girls was the only one I recognized. So
cute.
If you're like, I bet I know this man, he was in a movie 40 years later and looks totally different, but he definitely played Rochester that one time. Do you have a podcast about Jane Eyre? Because that's the only reason you'd know that.
Oh my God. His claim to fame. That one small role he had.
Where he like notably had a weird teeth situation. Because he doesn't have a weird teeth situation in like modern pictures of him. But he was like very like... he was much more physical, like in terms of like fighting and not fighting Jane, which like that is one point this man has over Charlton Heston. Charlton Heston wanted to fight Jane. He wanted to fight everybody else.
I loved, so the best moment of that stood out to me is at the wedding interruption when he like lunges at his brother-in-law. And what I was thinking, I was like, okay, imagine if that guy shows up, you lunge at him and you strangle him and you're like, shut up, shut up, shut up. And then he, Mason, for whatever reason, is like, okay, I take it back. He'd be like, whew, all right, Jane, where were we? She'd be like, no, you just attacked that guy. What's happening here?
Violence always works.
Yes.
The moments of like truly great acting, because I also want to talk about the Jane. So let me back up, because I do also want to say this was, it basically was like, if you took the 1949 script, mm-hmm. and you were like, I want to make this a little bit truer to the book, mm-hmm. but we do not have more budget. We do not have a different set. It's the same set.
It's similar. The staircase is different. That's one thing that stood out to me, is that this one had a very nice curved like stone staircase, obviously mm-hmm. made out of styrofoam, but the others was like a kind of layered like staircase of like wood
totally.
With a banister.
I think over the last 3 years, they've updated that set, but I would not be surprised at all to learn it was the same building and literally like the same set, because the layout of like the front room, and they do a better job of like pretending that they're in multiple rooms at different times. Like mm-hmm. they do have more than one room in that way, but like the garden's in the same spot. It's the same, not piano instrument.
And like the French doors.
Bertha's window is there, except it has bars on it now. Like it's the same set.
That would be a huge red flag, right? If you went to go live and work in a house and you're outside, this is actually like the setup of a horror movie. You're outside and you notice one window has bars on it and no other windows do. I'd be like, that's very suspicious and ominous.
Because
like,
that's for keeping something in. If all the windows have bars, it could be to keep something out. But one window...
ooh, spooky. Very spooky.
But we've established that Jane does not look up.
No.
She couldn't possibly. She does look really dramatically to every other direction but up, though. This mm-hmm. actress, I literally wrote down at one point, the eye acting she was doing.
Yeah. Well, that's how the movie opens, is her eyes just doing like dramatic look arounds as like fog kind of drifts in front. I thought it was a very interesting opening. If it's like a nowadays thing, I wouldn't give it any kudos. But for the time and the budget, I'm like, oh, well, that's kind of fun and different.
Well, and also, like, as we established in the spectacular commercials, which I don't think you got to watch because you had to rush through it.
I was skipping the commercials.
they were, so first of all, Westinghouse, wonderful. I'm really excited about their whole frost-free fridge situation. I learned a lot about that. So unlike other frost-free fridges where you have to like dump out a little thing, like this has an automatic situation with a magic button, and you might go, magic button, well, I have to probably press that magic button. No, you don't. It counts how many times you open the fridge and it magically does it itself. Wow. So that's why the button is so magic. Do I understand defrosting fridges other than that time that I had to do it in college with my mini fridge? No.
The fridge of the future today, but in the past.
The fridge of the past in the past, you know?
I did happen to see part of a commercial that was talking about television sets. And she's like,
that was the one I was going to talk about.
A whopping 22 inches. And I'm like, ooh.
21 inches.
Oh, boy.
which is TVs, they talk about the cross length. So it's mm-hmm. corner to corner. It's 21 inches.
Yeah.
Which is wild when you think about it. My laptop screen that I was watching it on was notably bigger than that, which like that was their huge, like twice as big as your TV now screen, which was so interesting. Westinghouse, for those of you who are wondering, you can tell this movie was really interesting because I have Westinghouse facts. It is still a company that makes appliances and electronics. So they still do that. But they also like basically through this creating these TV movies and stuff, essentially like accidentally created a production company, and that spun off and became part of Viacom and then ultimately part of Paramount.
Hey.
But I just find that really funny that they basically were like, we need to get our commercials on something people will watch. Let's mm-hmm. make movies and then put our commercials in between them.
Well, there you go. That's the whole studio cycle in action, right? And am I crazy, or isn't it, you know, when you were little and you'd stay at home sick with the cold and you're watching daytime television and there'd be all those ads for, oh, no, no, I'm thinking of Publishers Clearing House, the ones that give the people a check every day for the rest of their lives or whatever, when they bring in the big cartoon checks. And I was like, is this them?
None of those facts sound right, but that's so amazing.
That's Publishers Clearing House. I was like, is Westinghouse the one that promises to pay you for the rest of your life for nothing? But no, it's the other guys.
They both do things and they're both really involved in television. And Piper, and that's this, guys, there's nothing to say about this movie. I mean, there's things to say. We're going to say them, but like, it's a movie. It's very similar to, did you hear the Hello Darling thing about it's a movie?
No.
Harry Styles, when asked about the movie on a panel, was like, it's just such a movie. It's a movie. Like, he didn't have anything to say about it. And that's how I feel about this, where I'm like, they did a movie and they used the same set and they slightly updated the script. And to be fair to them, it is definitely truer to the book than the other ones. But there's so many moments that were like bizarre in the 49 and then clearly the same idea, where it's like she comes in and Adele is in there asleep already and they wake her up to take her upstairs. Instead of telling Rochester, like instead of like confessing her love to Rochester, she tells Mrs. Fairfax about it and then says she's going to leave.
Yes.
There's so many other parallels like that. Like we watch Bertha
comes downstairs. Yes. To burn the living room.
So she lights the curtains on fire, which we watch happen. And then we do like, there is a little bit more of a reason why Jane wakes up, because we do get evidence that Bertha was outside her door, which is a little bit more true to the book. Mm-hmm. But Jane goes downstairs, wakes up Rochester. Rochester pulls, I don't know if you noticed this, he pulls down the curtain that wasn't on fire. So there's like two tattered curtains. One is smoking. The other one is not smoking. And he pulls down the one that isn't smoking. And I found that so funny.
Well, maybe he wanted to grab that one and then use it to smother the other one. I don't know.
He doesn't pull down the one that was on fire. So he pulls down the one that wasn't on fire, stomps it out, and then the smoking stops. And the one that was smoking is still just hanging up.
Well, you know, maybe, I mean, if he had fake teeth, maybe he also had fake eyes and just was really bad at seeing which one was burning.
They did their best.
One thing I will say about this, there were a couple of things where you can tell that they had a bit more budget. Mm-hmm. So I liked that we got an opening scene, and I think both of these things were simply stock footage that they used. But in the opening, we got an exterior shot of a carriage mm-hmm. going through some woods. And I was like, oh, they actually have something, but probably just stock footage. But then again, when she runs away, we also get, I presume, stock footage of ocean waves crashing over these rocks. And I was like, oh, wow, we're actually getting some exterior things here. Like, I wonder if the people watching this who saw the movie 2 years ago and they're like, oh, I'm so excited it's back. They'd be like, whoa, these effects are blowing my mind.
This is crazy. Yeah, so that was true. And then also, like, unlike in the 49 where she's like standing on a hill and it's unclear how long she's been gone or what the hell she's been doing. She's just on a hill. This woman is in a bush. I think that's like essentially where she's supposed to be. And we know she's been gone for 6 months. What are you doing in the bush? Did you live in that bush for 6 months, Jane? Like, right? Did you fully Disney princess it and all of the little critters of the forest brought you berries and stuff? You gonna live in this bush?
We literally just in our last episode were talking about Jane going into nature. And one of the passages that we chose was her talking about like witnessing like a lizard and a bird or whatever. And she's like, but I can't live like them. This Jane apparently can. She's like, I am that lizard now.
Totally. Oh my God. So
but no,
funny.
I thought, so I actually liked the end part of this. The woman who played Jane, I liked the way that she reacted to like the situation. I thought she played that kind of distant, lost, emotionless shock very well. Like, you can really see that it feels as if like her world has been turned upside down. And then, yeah, to have 6 months pass and we get a shot of her presumably just out in nature and she's kind of just out there rambling to herself. And I'm like, what an interesting, because of course then she like hears his voice and she goes back and she seems totally sane and fine. But I'm like, what an interesting thing to do if an adaption ever was like this situation actually caused Jane to go crazy. And then she like became like a woman in an attic or something. Like, I was like, she's lost her mind. I thought it was interesting.
No, for sure. I completely agree. And I also think like to come back to the eye acting that she was doing, I had several moments, a lot of times, like the whole thing that we do with these older versions is be like, what an insane thing that you guys did anyway. Like, but I think weirdly the TV commercial and talking about the fact that like 21 inches is your big upgrade because they showed the other version of the TV that was like really, really small. So the people who are watching it could be watching it really easily on like a 10 inch TV screen. Mm-hmm. So like imagine something with like that level of quality that we're looking at, that small. You have to act big. Like the whole thing that they said in the commercial, which was so interesting to me, is like, this is balcony seating to the front row. Like that's the way they're trying to sell it, is this difference.
I like that.
And when you think about that, the idea, we've talked a lot about the fact that these actors seem like they've moved from theater into television. Mm-hmm. And then ultimately lots of them moved into movies as well. But when you think about how much more with television, you would have to play it like you do in the theater, where you have to make your face expressions really big and readable so that people who aren't sitting next to you can see what your face looks like. And so I think her eye acting, it gives definition, where lots of times their faces got completely washed out by just the quality of the film, the physical film they were using. You couldn't pick up on it, which I noticed the bizarre way that the light affected this film a lot with like the candles and things.
Yes, I was going to comment on that too. Like, I know that it was simply just the quality of the film, but it gave it this very interesting kind of spooky vibe that around every flame, there's like a black, like little halo. Void. Mm-hmm. Yeah, very interesting. I think that would be kind of like in a modern movie, almost like a cool effect / throwback to like intentionally put an effect like that around candles would be cool.
Well, and then even just like some of the other choices that they made too, I wondered about, because I didn't go back and check this in the book, but like my recollection of Bertha with her candle that she leaves outside of Jane's door is always that it's like there was a candle sitting outside her door. Mm-hmm. And in most of the adaptions that we see, it's like one of those in the little handholdy candle containers.
A candle holder.
Yeah, sure. It was a little candle holder. I think that's the right word. And my brain was just like, no, it's got another
candle container.
A little candle container with like a little handle on it that they set outside the door. And it's like very ominous. Like, why would she just set this here? But then in this movie, it's sitting on its side and it's almost like dropped outside mm-hmm. of Jane's door. And it hasn't caught anything on fire, which I think the reason they did that back then with a very clearly a real flame is because they just like did stuff like that. And they were like, it might set the whole set on fire, but it's probably going to be fine.
Well, they had somebody's kid standing in the wings with a fire extinguisher just ready.
A little like 10-year-old boy who like, yeah. This is how he's going to feed his family. Oh God. We're talking about the 50s, like it was 1,000 years ago, being like, oh my God, it's real.
So thinking about, cause I was on, picking up the same vibes about the kind of like theater style performance that we're getting mm-hmm. with some of the acting things here. It honestly made me excited for when we eventually get to watch one of the silent films because I love the idea of like silent film acting is also typically rather dramatic and over the top to compensate mm-hmm. for the lack of dialogue. And so I'm excited to see how a Bertha in that one is probably going to be like the most dramatic person. So mm-hmm. I can't wait.
Which like, just so people know, we haven't not watched them because we don't want to. We obviously do want to. Most of those are in like film archives. And a lot of those are in film archives that aren't even open to the public. So we would have to travel to the physical film and then get permission from the place that owns the physical film to get to watch it. Mm-hmm. And I haven't seen confirmation on a few of the like the very first one is one in particular that I've actually reached out to like studios and stuff about. And I haven't gotten confirmation that they actually physically have it anymore. Mm-hmm. So those are some of the adaptions that like, if you for some reason know somebody who knows somebody or you found a way to get access to or any of those things for those truly like really old ones. The very first one actually there's a 1910 one, but there's one that is, I believe it's either 1909 or it's earlier in 1910. But the very first Jane Eyre put on film was an Italian silent film. And so Piper and I just might have to travel to Italy for the podcast.
Woe is us.
We live hard lives. It's difficult, you guys. Anyway, that was a tangent.
No, it's a good one though. It's something to look forward to wet people's whistles. That's whistle. Not a weird thing to say, but anyway, a few other things that stood out to me. I loved seeing Rochester's heroism of jumping into that fiery blaze and like people holding him back being like, no, you can't. And he's like, I must save her. I was like, always good for me. Bonus points to see mm-hmm. a Rochester who actually actively tries to save his wife, no matter how he feels about her. So loved seeing that. I freaking loved that when they was doing the proposal scene and like Jane admits her feelings, he like throws his arms open and he's like, hooray, and gives her this big old hug. And then she's like, okay, but I have to leave. He's like, what? We just hugged. We're essentially boyfriend girlfriend now.
Basically, you said you liked me and I gave you a hug, which means I like you back. So you can't leave, Jane.
Yeah, seriously. These are the rules of the playground. So that was cute, that big old hug. I didn't sense a hint of any kind of romantic spark between these two in their performance, personally. And the hug really sealed it for me when he just hugged her instead of kissed her. And I was like, okay. Although that being said, when he's like begging her not to go, he gave a sensual neck kiss. And I was like, ooh, TV, didn't know you'd allow people to smooch each other on the throat. Okay, nice.
Yeah, absolutely. It was definitely like there's rules about what you can put on TV and how much smooching there is. So it's like almost the idea of like, well, you can't do more than a 2 second on the mouth smooch. Mm. So if you want to get more smoochy, you got to do it like to her neck, which just feels way like you're right. Like that's way more intimate than giving her a longer smooch on the lip. Another moment that I will give them credit for that was like the first big difference I noticed from the 49 so in the 49, they just like don't even pretend that his horse had anything to do with them meeting. And it's just like here's Mr. Rochester. He's come to meet you in a very normal way, Jane. Where this one, she's like wandering in the garden when some man pops out behind a set. Like, it's so clear. And he like pops out and he's like, whoa. And she's like, what happened? And he's like, my horse just like threw me off and ran away. The horse is definitely not going to come back. It's definitely not going to be on camera.
Oh my gosh. I love that so much. It makes me think of like skits that I used to put on with my friends for like school talent shows when we didn't have any like performable talents. And so we're like, why don't we just make up a little play? And we would do those things. And the one I can remember is that we made a story about people who want money so they can like buy a dog. But so they're like, how are we going to earn money? And they're like, maybe we'll like wash other people's dogs. And so literally a part of our play was like two of my friends standing on the stage being like, but how are we going to get any money? And then me from backstage yeeted this like dog stuffed animal onto the stage. At which point I think it was Susie who pointed and was like, look, a dog we can wash. So I can relate to the production of this. Just going up to someone, it's like, your dog sure is dirty. Wasn't it great that I could clean it for you?
Give me $5. Now I can afford a dog of my own.
Exactly.
Although that, is absolutely the vibe that this Rochester gave off. It's trust me, I have a horse. Don't look behind the curtain, Jane.
So good. It's like, oh, look, a man I can marry.
Okay, I want to talk a little bit about the fact that they're Americans. And like, just do we think it really felt like they just like weren't trying to make them Americans, right? Like they just didn't bother with the accent. I read that right?
No, I think so. Yeah.
Because like they talk about going to Ireland and she's like across the sea. And I'm like, are you trying to imply that they're like rich Americans? It's the thing that happens in this where it's like, these people, if we had time machines and we were able to go back to the people on the production of this show and be like, okay, so there's going to be this thing, it's called a podcast. It's kind of like a radio. It's kind of like the radio. It's basically the radio. Mm-hmm. And essentially there's ways that you can watch all of these movies that you guys are making really easily. Like everybody can have access to them. It's a thing that happens. And they're like, okay, accept your premise. And I'm like, okay, so we are going to watch this movie and record us talking about it. And people are going to listen to that. And they would be like, why? Like, why? Like, just imagine them being like, listen, we didn't try that hard on this movie. And like, if we asked them, why do they have American accents? Because the actor had one and we didn't think people would care.
Pretty much. They do have a line when Rochester is talking about raising Adele that he wanted her to like be brought up in like an English garden. So it is implied that they are in England. So I think across the sea simply means across the English Channel to get over to Ireland. But or whatever channel it is in between
English Channel is the one to France.
Okay.
We have time. I'm going to Google it.
Cool. Sweet. Geography was not a good subject for me.
Well, I lived in Ireland for 6 months, so I really should know what that's called. Ireland to England. Well, isn't it Wales right there?
Well, that's not the name of the body of water.
I know, but I'm like trying. Wales.
But it's not called Wales.
I just mean like, am I looking for between England? It's the Irish Sea. So yay! It's a sea.
Okay, congrats. Cool.
No wonder we didn't remember it. Be more creative with your names if you want me to remember what they're called.
Yeah. Take me to Spaghetti Island, a.k.a. England. Or Ireland, whichever eats more spaghetti. Because it's not Italy, that's for sure.
We're doing great, guys. Two episodes in a row when you're getting top quality, definitely sane podcast hosts.
Oh my gosh. Well, this is what happens when we have a video that's essentially the same thing as something else we've already watched. So we have to fill the air.
There's a man. He is weird and it's like, this is fine. Like, that's how I feel about this. It's not truly terrible. There's nothing uniquely awful about this. It is a slight step up. It really makes some of the other ones look better in comparison. Mm-hmm. While I was watching this, I was like, I am so excited for our rewatches. Imagine how good the like 83 is going to look compared to this.
Oh my gosh. Seriously.
Mm, top quality. Seriously.
I would love to be in the shoes of someone who grew up watching those versions of Jane Eyre. And then you can be alive in a time when you get like the Timothy Dalton version or God forbid the 2006 version, be like, oh my God. Like,
or
wow.
Even it makes the 73. You're like, this is an adaptation of Jane Eyre. This is somebody who like read the book. Like, that's honest to God. If somebody told me that the guy who wrote the 49 and the person had only ever seen the 43 movie, like that's what he was adapting, I would not be surprised. Mm-hmm. And if you told me that the guy who adapted this version, which I do believe they're both men, I looked at the screenwriters because it was the 40s and 50s and women didn't think back then. And if you told me that he had someone describe the book to him, I would believe that too.
Yeah.
Where the 73 is very clearly written by somebody who knows the book. The 72 even, that's the movie, right? No, 70, not 70. 72. Mm-hmm. There is a 72. I've been looking at some more adaptions to try to find more of these to sort of fill in some of the other things that we're doing since that's what our podcast is about. By the way, if anybody, let's talk about this for a minute. If anybody knows anyone who speaks Italian, like is an interpreter of Italian, and or Spanish, which feels more likely, there's a whole Spanish miniseries that there's a very good quality version of that I really want to watch. I would love to know what they're saying. And then the last one is Czech.
Cool.
So if you speak Czech and you're listening to this podcast, first of all, hello.
Hello.
I would love to be friends. Let's talk about it. But so those are the three languages that we're working on. And we probably will end up watching them just without knowing what they're saying because we know the plot well enough.
Yeah. Which I think will also be an interesting experiment because, you can interpret a lot just from visuals and acting.
Yeah. I could have done this without sound and still gotten the same amount out of it.
Exactly.
Except for the moment where he's really, really trying to tell her that he for sure has a horse over there.
Yeah, right. Don't that you'd have no idea. You'd just be like, who's that man crawling out of the
bushes? It's not a man doing an impression of a horse sound. It's a horse.
So I loved Blanche's very enthusiastic piano playing. Like, she sat down and like, because typically when a Blanche sits down at a piano or whatever this thing is, the sinet or whatever you described it as.
Same, close enough. You know what we mean.
Yeah. Typically they tend to play like a kind of somber, elegant tune, but this woman sits down, practically cracks her knuckles. It's like, like puts out this like really upbeat tune.
And Rochester immediately goes, no, thank you. You did it. He does it faster than he did with Jane. He goes, at least Jane is interesting. You're so boring.
Right.
Although, and she's like, why are you not even looking at me right now?
Yeah. She actually stops her playing because she's like, clearly you don't care about this very exciting piano music. Okay. Sorry that you don't have taste, Rochester. Yeah. Jeez.
Yeah. This Blanche knows that Rochester is in love with Jane and she is not thrilled.
I thought the Blanche's mother, Mrs. Ingram, had some pretty sassy, fun close-up shots. Like, she was very kind of old-timey, like, for this TV movie era of, like, well, I never. Of like, it's so, her stuff was kind of fun.
And she says a line that I think is in the book of, like, well, they're like, that's the governess right over there. And she goes, well, this would help her to learn what a piece of garbage she is for her, just for her profession. I think it's good for governesses to know they suck.
Yeah.
Which is always helpful, guys. That's a hot tip. If you think that somebody for something that is like outside of their control and you've never actually talked to them and you literally didn't even know what they do, if you think that they suck, please tell them to their face, but like not to them. Like tell them to somebody near them after they've confirmed that the person you're talking about can hear you.
Yeah. Very good. This is how to be an awful person 101.
Yeah, how to be a dick.
Yeah.
I think, this is not 101. There's some really basic things in 101. And I think
this is for advanced users only.
Yeah, this woman has already like successfully flying colors past the 101 class. That's where it's like judge people immediately. Like don't talk to anyone. Know that you're better than people as soon as you walk into the house. All that good stuff.
Very good. No pilot in this. Didn't the other one have a dog?
No
dogs.
I would have remembered Charlton Heston and a dog.
Yeah, that'd be cute. So no dogs, no horses. Boo-hoo. I thought it was funny that when it first cuts to like the morning after Jane has arrived and she's pushing Adele on the swing, and then Jane goes to like sit next to her on the swing, and just because of the volume of her skirt, it looks like she's sitting on Adele's lap, and just be like, you were breaking that child's leg.
I did write down this Adele is very cute, but so dumb.
Yes.
Oh my God. Because they're trying to show her teaching, which like in the other adaptions, she's just like sitting with a book. And Jane is like correcting her over things. This little girl is like 1, 2, 3, using her fingies, 4, 5, 6.
And like trying to spell apple and all kinds of other stuff. And
which
like,
I can relate. Spelling is hard. Spelling is hard. She got all the right letters, just not enough of them.
Yeah, she's doing it. And it's a different language. She's supposed to have grown up with French. So good for her.
But she is also American.
Yes, very clearly. Like, it was the only, like, when she first spoke, I was like, okay, they're not even trying with an accent with this child. Fine, whatever. And then it's only when she, like, in reference to her mom, she goes, mama, like, that was the only hint of an accent that that child ever gave. Everything else was like, I got hired because I'm cute. That's why I'm here.
Like, you have to make a choice. Do you get a child that is good at acting, mm-hmm. or do you get a child that is very cute and closer to the age? And they picked a child that was closer to the age. And there was a few different times where you could see her being like, I have to say like 2 whole sentences in a row.
Yes.
Let me do this. And like, you can watch her like look up and try to remember her lines. Like, mama died.
She's like, yes. Give me a cookie. I did it.
I'll love my cookie now, mom. Actual mom who's not in heaven and therefore has access to cookies.
Mm-hmm. They're like, okay, cut everybody. Can we please get Janice her cookies? Okay. And we're rolling again in 5.
Sorry. I think you mean Lillian. I was a child actor who only did it for cookies.
There you go. Yes. Look her up on IMDb.
Should we talk about our near miss at being child actors?
About how we auditioned for TPT Kids.
Yes, we did. Piper went and auditioned in a first round for a television show here in the Twin Cities. Mm-hmm. And then she went, who are my friends now that I'm, we were like 12, right?
We were middle school.
Yeah. So who of my friends also has star potential, which she thought about again in the future and look at us now. Yeah. But we went and did like this weird inside joke skit and never heard from them.
Yeah, you know, they were probably looking for kids who could do cartwheels or other amazing stuff. And we're like, here's the thing. We have so many funny inside jokes. You won't get them. You have to be there. But we're just going to like list them off for you.
What you don't understand is we can laugh about things that other people don't find funny all day. Listen to our podcast.
Oh my God. I love it so much, Lillian. Every single time I have any kind of glimmer of like fame or the spotlight, I'm instantly going to call you and be like, Lillian, hear me out. We just have to train 5 dancing eagles and we'll get on to America's Got Talent.
And we end up
America's Got Talons because it's eagles.
And we like start with real birds and then realize that's too hard. So we just throw each other stuffed animals and go, this is really cool.
And then we'll just tell inside jokes as we're tossing animals back and forth, you know.
And no one else will enjoy it and we will.
Oh my God.
This is all in the podcast.
I love it so much. My last thing that I found funny/notable was at the very end when she returns to him and he's like, oh, are these her fingers? Is there more? And she's like, yes, there's more. Feel, see, and all this stuff. And they're getting together. He like calls her name out a whole bunch. He's just like, Jane Eyre, Jane Eyre. And I'm like, typically whenever like the name of a title of something is referenced in a movie or show, I'm always like, hey, roll credits joke. But I'm like now thinking to myself, I'm like, I think most major movies need to end with somebody screaming out the main character's name. Like, can you imagine you've sat through like 7 movies of Harry Potter and at the very end, someone's like, Harry Potter, Harry, Harry Potter. And then everyone applauds and the curtain rises and it's like, oh my God, yes.
The curtain rises is the wrong direction.
Well, this was, I guess, you and I acting it out before the movie actually starts. And everyone's like, please leave. We want to watch HP.
The movie starts at 7. We got there at 6:30. We try to convince people. This is a movie.
Oh boy, God. I hope you guys like listening to us laugh to ourselves because that's what this has been.
where there was nothing that happened in this movie. Although, speaking of curtains, mm-hmm. at one point, one of the big set improvements that they made is there's like a curtained area between the staircase and the living room area that they can use to create a separate space. And after the wedding, when he kicks everyone out by just being like, that's enough. And then everybody just like stands there for a second and then goes, I think he's right. And they just like slowly file out of the room. He goes to close the curtains and they're like exactly the size of the doorway. Like usually when you have curtains like that to block off a space, you get ones that are slightly bigger. And they were like, this velvet is actually very expensive. So please measure it down to the centimeter so we can just cover it. And you can tell that he like whips it across and goes, ooh, that one went a little far. And he has to like adjust it.
Very nice. Anyway. There was a bit of compassion from the interrupters in that scene when they're mm-hmm. like, she's had a bad day, dude. You don't need to bring her down here. And he's like, no, do it. And I was like, listen to the weirdos who came and interrupted your wedding.
It was another like, this is, if you hadn't seen the 49, parts of this are just like, they're so different. These two are really meant to be. I mean, not meant to be. They're very intentionally not meant to be. But like in the format we're doing, like, I'm glad we watched them in the order we did, because mm-hmm. that moment was like, it was different in the 49, but it was clear. This was clearly their interpretation of the 49 moment where they're like, why are you doing this? And then she comes down and where Bertha and that one is down there for a while, Bertha's down for like 10 seconds and he's just like, go away. And I'm like, well, then why bring her down here?
Although they did upgrade, I think in the previous version, she had her hands tied with rope. In this one, she's elevated up to chain link manacles.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's even more dangerous, that says, or they just have more money to restrain her. So
yeah, maybe they had to buy manacles for something else since they had it in the costume closet.
But she did do a nice little chompy on his shoulder. So yeah,
so true. She didn't attack Jane. In the other one, she attacks Jane. This one, she attacks Rochester. This one, I fully believe. The other one, I feel like Jane went, or Bertha went crazy. Mm-hmm. And it was maybe Rochester's fault, or maybe it wasn't. This one, I feel like this woman just hates Rochester. Yeah. Like, she's not crazy. She knows what she's doing, and it's hating Rochester.
100%.
Mm-hmm. On that note, what are we doing next week, Piper?
Well, first we have to rate this version.
Oh, God. Okay. It's a movie. So it was successfully a movie. Mm-hmm. Technically, they put something on film. Mm-hmm. I can't remember what I gave the 49.
I think we should go in blind. I think
3 out of 10.
Three out of 10.
Bad show.
So you actively disliked it.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, it was like fine. They did it. And I would never watch it again.
What is your means of ranking?
I'm not, like, I can't even come up with like a fun thing. Candles. I'll give it candles.
There you go. 3 out of 10 candles from Lillian. I'm going to give this a sturdy 4 out of 5 automatic defrosting refrigerators. I'm going off of this as in 5 is completely average. So I'm putting this a little under because it was boring. Like, there was nothing really bad or wrong about it. It just was like, it's a thing that exists. So I'm giving it a 4 out of 5.
Yeah. I think the 3 out of 5 for me is like, I think if we had seen this first, I might've found some of the moments funnier. Like the 49 was hilarious to me. It brought me so much joy, where it's like, this one was like, it was a better Jane Eyre adaptation in that it was truer to the books, but it was also to me a worse Jane Eyre adaptation because like, it didn't get good. Like mm-hmm. it didn't get good. It just got less funny. And Charlton Heston's not in it.
Yeah. It didn't even have the man have the hour himself. Just a guy with funny teeth.
Anyway. I think that's points. Great. So for listeners who are like, oh, Jane Eyre, they're scraping the bottom of the barrel for Air Buds, doesn't have anything left for that. Wrong.
Wrong 1000%.
We're just committed. We're going to do all of them. So what are we going to do next week related to Jane Eyre, Piper?
So next week, we have the incredible privilege and honor of talking about a book review and speaking with the author herself. So this is another phenomenal instance in which someone has reached out to us and said, hey, I like what you're doing. I have happened to contribute something to this fandom slash culture of Jane Eyre. And so we have been reading Mr. R, which is part of a rock and roll romance series, written by Tracy Neese. So we've been reading the book, so we have the honor of speaking with Tracy. We're very excited to talk to her about how she took this classic tale, brought it into also somewhat of a modern era. This is kind of 70s, 80s, sort of with like the rock and roll era, sort of British invasion. It starts out with this band that Mr. Rochester is a part of, and kind of takes us through the decisions he makes and why, based on, you know, the particular influences and choices of this time period. So very excited to chat with her, to talk about the book, give our reviews and everything. So join us next week for that. It's going to be great.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to be doing a lot of reading between now and when we record the episode, but I've heard Piper has said that it's really good. And I'm from the parts that I've read so far, it is good. I'm genuinely super excited. It's such a fun thing that we get to do because of this podcast. And it is part of a series of three books that she has called the Rock and Roll Brontes. So mm-hmm. It's different Bronte adaptions that she brings in into this time period and does sort of the same thing with. Those are all available for purchase. You can buy paperback copies on Amazon. It's a great option, very cool way to support a fellow fan of Air Buds, which is fantastic. And yeah, we'll be talking about all of that. We will likely do the same thing we did last time, where part of the review that we do will be spoiler-free and part of it will be spoiler-full. So mm-hmm. you can either listen to the first half to decide if you want to read the book and then come back and read the whole book, or just quickly read the book before next week, which is what I'll be doing. and then come listen to our show.
Shockingly, I am the one who's on top of the reading this time. So yay, the tables have turned.
Listen, we're equally procrastinators. We just come in different flavors.
It's so true. And I love that we know that and support each other in our procrastination. Yes. So if you are not a procrastinator and want to do something right now, you should go and follow us on all social media platforms. You can find us on the major ones. We are at Air Buds, spelled just like the show. And if you have a novel or fanfic or album that you wrote music-wise, composition inspired by Jane Eyre and the story that you want to share with us, have us review, tell us all about it via email. We are airbuds@gmail.com. We'd love to hear what you've got.
And if you are enjoying this episode, particularly if you enjoyed this episode, you are our people. you are our group. You're our lovely, honestly, mostly ladies and gentle people. And if you enjoyed that, please cut the rambling out of the podcast editing, Piper, in the future. Please fix what I just said just now. And go on your preferred podcast platform and give us as many stars as you feel we've earned and write a couple of sentences. It's really, really helpful. We love hearing feedback from you guys. It helps other people find the podcast, and tell your very specific literature friends that you know to come listen to this podcast as well, so we can find more of our people and bring them together under the umbrella of Jane Eyre.
Yay! It's a big umbrella and there's lots of love here. So we'd love to hear from you guys, and we hope that you tune in next week. So until then, we love you. Happy Jane Eyre reading and watching.
Bye.
Bye.